There's a three ball hit by Walton. Everything's gone their way here in the last 7 minutes of this ball game.
Unfortunately for Coach Aaron McKee, it's somebody's got to go back to the drawing board saying how are they going to make up for this loss.
And there's the final horn and the final score. Wichita State comes to Philadelphia and knocks off Temple 79-65.
Shockers are back, baby. Give Isaac Brown a long-term extension. They're above 500 at 14-13. Go to Temple and win. That's a place they don't do well. And they're now 14-12, 7-7 to AAC as they beat Temple, who's a 500 team as well. They're 14-13 overall. Shockers win 79-65. And, oh, yeah, another ranked team gets beat. Last night, the latest victim, number 3 Purdue, loses to Maryland. They were the number 1 team just a week or so ago. And now they've lost 3 of their last 4. So, K-State fans, take a deep breath and chill out. Because we have seen every team in the top 5 this year at one point or another, except for maybe Alabama. And they got drilled by 24 by Oklahoma in Norman. We see all these teams in top 5. KU's number 5. They lost 3 in a row. Lost by 23 at home. We've seen UConn all the way up to number 2 lose 5 out of 6. We've seen Creighton in the top 10 lose like 6 in a row. It's crazy. Now Purdue's lost 3 out of 4, and some people say, well, maybe they're the team to beat. There is no team to beat. Let's agree on that as Purdue loses by 14 to unranked Maryland, 68-54. So they've got their struggles. They've got to figure that out. Before we get to local sports, a couple of Chiefs notes, a couple of big Chiefs notes. It is being reported Eric Bieniemy is very close to becoming the offensive coordinator of the Washington Commanders. Now, I'm amazed at some of the people in Kansas City that are media people that don't seem to understand what's going on. And we live 3.5 hours out of Kansas City. They are not working hard enough or don't have connections and relationships with people to know part of what's going on here. And I'm not going to go into specific details per se, okay? But I'm going to tell you right now, Eric Bieniemy, the reason he's not a head coach in the National Football League, there are lots of factors, okay? But Eric Bieniemy has been interviewed by half of the National Football League. If he interviewed well, he would have a head coaching job, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the factors that I have heard through the grapevine from people very close to the situation, is that Eric Bieniemy has not interviewed that well. And that makes sense. I mean, if he was a home run interview, how would you not hire him? Well, then it would go to the second thing. Well, he's black. Well, there's other black coaches been hired. And they usually, and guys that are offensive coordinators of Super Bowl champions, guys that are offensive coordinators of Super Bowl losing teams like the Eagles and the DC of the Eagles are getting jobs. Okay. So I don't know if it's the color of Eric Bieniemy's skin that's causing him not to get a head coaching job. It might be a small factor. It might be his personality. It might be there's another factor that people believe, and that is that they don't fully believe that he's fully in charge of the offense in Kansas City, although I think that doesn't carry any water, and here's why. Because Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy have been with Andy Reid before. Mike Kafka never called plays, goes 1 year to the Giants, and now he's a head coaching candidate. Doug Peterson got a head coaching job. The same questions are asked. Was Doug Peterson calling the plays or Andy Reid? And I don't think it's a lot different now than it was then. So that one doesn't really hold a lot of water. I just think it simply comes down to owners interview whoever they want. Now, should they interview more minority candidates? Possibly. There is the Rooney Rule, which some people say is a bit of a mockery of the system, as Brian Flores pointed out, and sued the National Football League. But there are people in Kansas City, a few people that I know that cover the Chiefs, that have said, listen, there's reasons Eric Bieniemy's not a head coach yet. And it's a combination of a lot of things. It's not just because of the color of his skin. Okay, it's not just because he coaches under Andy Reid and he has Patrick Mahomes as his quarterback, but Eric Bieniemy does have a few red flags in his history. Now, he had gotten trouble with the law when he was in Colorado, okay? And that's, to me, it depends on what team and what owner looks at him. That might be a little bit too much, but there's other guys that have been hired that have bigger red flags than that. So I don't know how much weight that carries either. But I think at the end of the day, it's like any other job, right? You go and interview. There are people that interview for multiple jobs. When they come out of college, they might interview for 25 jobs. somebody out of college wanting a job, they might interview 25 times, and they might get turned down 25 times. Is that because somebody's being, you know, I don't like you because of the color of your skin? Is that because I don't like you personally? Is it because of your personality? Is it because you don't interview well? Is it because I just simply have a better candidate I like for my franchise than you, and you happen to get unlucky and go 0 for 25? And in Bieniemy's case, 0 for 16? I don't know all of those answers, but when I have people I see in the sports media in Kansas City sending out messages today on Twitter saying, it doesn't make any sense, I just don't get it, I don't think you're connected as well as you should be. Because it's like the NFL, I know it's a multi-billionaire business, but it's still a job. Okay, this is a business, and there are employers, and there are owners, just like there's an owner of this radio station, and there's a general manager, and there's a sports director, and there's Jason. I'm kidding. Jason has a multitude of titles, okay? He can pick whatever one he wants. Host of Waterside Wake Up. He can say that he's a news director doing newscasts. He can do production and whatever. I mean, but the point being is that there is a hierarchy, right? At any company, there's a hierarchy. There's an owner, there's a president, there's a CEO, there's a general manager, there might be a sales manager, there might be an insurance adjuster manager, whatever it might be. And the people at the top are the ones that are going to decide who they're going to hire. Now, you might be the most qualified person in the world, but if you come off across to somebody as arrogant and brash and kind of a prick, you're probably not going to get hired. Now, if you come in confident but not overly cocky, Mike Trant was that way. He was confident when he came in, and I had no choice but to hire him because he was that good. And I won the, you know, no offense to you guys, but one of the greatest hires I've ever been able to do. Sure. I mean, Mike was amazing, and God rest his soul.
I'm not offended. I worked with him.
Yeah, he was tremendous. Tremendous at news, man. Tremendous at news. Not going to be anybody else like him. And so that there's a difference. He didn't come in and just say, he told me what to do. He was confident but not arrogant and cocky. Maybe slightly, but he wasn't overwhelming at all. He sold himself. Eric Bieniemy, I think, to me, when I see him talk to the media now, compared to when he first was in Kansas City, he is way better at talking to the media. He is improved, and he sounds like a guy I want to run through a wall for. I think he's very good, but he is a personality that we have heard there have been confrontations at times within the Chiefs organization, Eric Bieniemy, with some players here and there, and maybe even some other coaches. Now, that happens at other organizations, too. Let's not sit here and say, listen, Dusty and I have had our disagreements over the years over things, okay? But we don't hate each other. We don't hold it against each other. And Patrick Mahomes sitting here loving up on Bieniemy after he won the Super Bowl. You know, there's adversity. There's times as a husband and wife, you have disagreements. And some people now just give up and get divorced and move on. But it used to be that you fought through all those things. And some people still do. So people have asked me this. I was asked this yesterday, and it's a great question. It's a fair question. And for people that don't follow Eric Bieniemy's track record closely because they have other things to do in their life, or maybe they're not a Chiefs fan, is why, and here's the question, and this is why I think it's interesting to me that a KC media person or people would actually ask the question on social media. I think it looks pretty poor on them when they ask, like, somebody that doesn't follow the Chiefs asks the same question. You should know more than the regular fan if you cover the Chiefs in Kansas City. All right? You just should. And when somebody puts out there, it just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand how Eric Bieniemy hasn't been hired. To me, it makes perfect sense. People don't want to hire him as a head coach. That's it. There's something about him in the interview process, and there might be something in his background that maybe we don't all know about or know a little bit about. And he's just not – he hasn't found the right fit. Or there are people are making excuses to not hire him because they simply don't want to hire him as a head coach. Like, they're okay with him being the offensive coordinator, like the Commanders might be, but they're not comfortable with him being the head coach. And let me tell you something. People don't understand this sometimes. The head coach is the spokesperson for the organization. It's not the owner, and it's not the general manager. How many times has Clark Hunt and Brett Veach been interviewed since Andy Reid and Brett Veach and Clark Hunt all work together? Who do you think's done the most interviews? Come on. Don't waste time.
Well, it's got to be Andy
Reid. It's Andy Reid.
Andy Reid, yeah.
Well, come on. Why we got to think about that. Andy Reid does the most
really
interviews.
I didn't understand the question where
the question,
it was going. Yeah.
Who does the most interviews of those three people?
Okay, yeah.
It's Andy Reid.
Yeah.
He has to do one after every single game. He does a press conference every single week. Even on a bye week, he does it. How many times have you seen Clark Hunt being interviewed?
Hardly.
Jerry Jones is the only owner that gets interviewed a lot, and it's because he likes it. Brett Veach. How many times do you talk to Brett Veach? How many times do you interview Brett Veach? Do you see Brett Veach being interviewed? It's usually draft time.
Yeah.
That's it. Draft time. That is it. So now, how many times is the Eric Bieniemy interviewed compared to Andy Reid? Not nearly that much.
They do it once a week.
Right.
They don't do it after games.
Yeah, but it's not as extensive.
Super Bowl, right?
Right. Now, Bieniemy slides into Andy Reid's spot. Okay, that's your focal person of your organization. All right. Some teams have your quarterback right there, like the Chiefs do with Mahomes and Reid. But Mahomes and Reid are the two spokespeople for the Chiefs. Add Kelce, throw him in there. All three of those guys are bigger spokespeople than Clark Hunt or Brett Veach combined. Okay? You know, Spags does press conferences, but after the game, who do the media talk to? After a win or a loss, who do the media talk to immediately after the game?
Coach and quarterback.
Yep. There you go. It isn't Clark Hunt, it isn't Brett Veach, and it isn't Eric Bieniemy. It isn't Steve Spagnuolo. So that's something that people lose in translation is where does, like, well, I don't understand why he's not head coach. I think what part of this is that there's organizations saying, I think Eric Bieniemy would be a good head coach for the team, but I'm not comfortable with him being my focal point and spokesperson for the organization. I think that's what it's come down to. And so the question I was asked yesterday, and I think it's a great question, but I think it's silly from a media person in Kansas City to be asking the same question, is why would Eric Bieniemy go to another team and be an offensive coordinator and leave a team that's won two Super Bowls in the last 4 years, gone to the Super Bowl three of the last 5 years, they have been the five straight AFC title games at home. Why would you leave Patrick Mahomes? Why would you leave Andy Reid? And listen, if Eric Bieniemy's goal is to make good money and win a whole bunch of rings, he should stay where he is. But if Eric Bieniemy's goal, and maybe this is his ultimate goal, is to be a head coach, and you know what? He's got two rings, so he's got his rings. We talk about players cashing in, right? Well, Juju might leave this year. Well, he got his ring. Tyreek Hill left for more money because he already had his ring. He went. You want to cash in. You get your chance for that big deal, you want to cash in. It's no different for a coordinator or an assistant coach. If their dream is to be a head coach, then they've got to do what they got to do to be a head coach. And Eric Bieniemy has played this game for 2 or 3 years now where half the league's interviewed him, and he can't get a head coaching gig. So it doesn't even sound like anybody's been serious about actually hiring him. Mm-hmm. So now what does he have to do? Well, clearly what he's been doing isn't working to meet his ultimate goal, which must be to be a head coach. Now, if he doesn't want to be a head coach, then he should stay in Kansas City. That's a no-brainer. And that's what some people have been telling me. But here's the thing. He wants to be a head coach, apparently. And if he does, he has to get out of the shadow of Andy Reid, which that part I think is unfair because Doug Peterson was in the shadow of Andy Reid. There's other assistant coaches been in the shadow of Andy Reid and gone on to John Harbaugh, Ron Rivera, Washington Commanders, was an assistant under Andy Reid, Sean McDermott with the Bills. We could go on and on. There's a long coaching tree. But it is a little different with Bieniemy. And some people don't know for sure what that is, but I do believe there are some. I think the interview process speaks for itself to an extent. So Eric Bieniemy now needs to go somewhere else and prove that he can win and do well, have a good offense with a average quarterback. And if he does that, then he's got a better chance of being a head coach. Now, here's my question. If he's not being hired now, and he's a really good offensive coordinator with a talented quarterback, why is it that he goes to Washington and does a good job, and now suddenly he interviews better? So that's the question I have on it. But if Eric Bieniemy has been told by Andy Reid and people in the industry saying, listen, dude, you just got to get away from Andy, prove yourself for a year, and you're going to have a better chance, not a guarantee, a better chance to be a head coach. Eric, that's something that we highly recommend that you do. And I think that's what's happening. I also believe that the Chiefs are also ready to move on for Eric Bieniemy. I think they were close last year. Matt Nagy's in place, and I think that is a factor in this that people are overlooking. I think the Chiefs and Eric Bieniemy, I think the Chiefs are ready to move on to Matt Nagy as their OC. I believe that's why they brought him on in the first place when he was fired in Chicago. And I believe that is part of the equation, and that Eric Bieniemy, like, it would look really bad if he got fired as offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm not saying that they want to fire him, but I do think the Chiefs are like, listen, this is kind of a win-win. You need to get out of my shadow. If I'm Andy Reid, I'm like, Eric, you got to get out of my shadow. And at the same time, I got a guy ready to go that I think it might be time to turn over a different OC leaf. And you go try to get a head coaching job, and we'll be happy with Matt Nagy. And I'll tell you one more step further down the line that might be overanalyzing this a bit. Andy Reid is 64 years old. He is a big guy. He's overweight. He'll be the first to tell you. He likes to eat a lot of cheeseburgers. That's not really healthy for you, by the way. Andy Reid could hang it up in 2 years. He could hang it up in 3 years. He could have a health issue tomorrow, and suddenly he's done. Do you think the Kansas City Chiefs want Eric Bieniemy to be the new head coach? I don't.
No.
And so the sooner they can have Nagy in that position, I think Matt Nagy is the heir apparent to Andy Reid. I think it's a logical next step. Unless Doug Peterson would somehow pop open, I think those are the two candidates that the Chiefs would be comfortable with. Matt Nagy had a relationship with your quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, which he already does. Matt Nagy worked with Patrick Mahomes before he was being drafted. They gave him notes as to how to knock out the interview. Matt Nagy has probably a relationship that goes back further than Eric Bieniemy does with Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. So if Andy Reid steps aside tomorrow or 2 years from now, who do you want being your next head coach? You want a guy that is comfortable, that has a great relationship with your $500 million quarterback. And there were rumors and there were things out there about Bieniemy and Mahomes that had some rifts after the AFC title game last year and at halftime. Whether all that's true or not, I don't know. But there was some tension there. There's no question. And that happens, as established. Sometimes you just got to get past it. I think that's a bigger part of this equation that people are letting on that people aren't talking about, is because I'm not hearing a lot of people talk about it.
No.
It's that Barrett Bieniemy.
I have a theory of why that is when you get down there.
Yeah. So Bieniemy goes to Washington. Nagy slides in the OC. Now, Bieniemy has a better chance maybe get a head coaching job. The Chiefs can hide behind that so they don't have to actually let him go after winning a Super Bowl, because that will look horrible, right? And now you don't have to worry about, okay, Andy Reid has a health issue, you know, 2 months from now. Now you don't have to deal with why did they pass over Eric Bieniemy and give the head coaching job to Matt Nagy? It would be a horrible look, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So you eliminate Bieniemy, not in a physical way. You just have him go somewhere else, and you convince him that, dude, if you want to be a head coach, you got to go somewhere else. That helps alleviate that issue that Chiefs may have down the line.
There's things that don't add up on a lateral move, just to be making a lateral
absolutely.
Move. I think this was all calculated when Matt Nagy came back to Kansas City last year. I really believe that there was some smoke to the fire of the story that came out about Eric Bieniemy and Patrick Mahomes. It disappeared real fast. This is my theory why people aren't talking about it. The Chiefs were like, let it go. This is going to go away anyway.
We're going to wait a year.
Yeah, this will happen at some point. This is going to go away. Just let this go.
And the Brian Flores situation also made it tougher for them to move on from Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, and so Matt Nagy did not come back to Kansas City to be a quarterback coach. Nobody's going to convince anybody of that.
From a head coach to a quarterback coach. Yeah. That was not
and
even
so
a lateral
if
move,
you,
obviously.
If you add two and two together and look at a coach like Eric Bieniemy, who's now won two rings as an offensive coordinator with the Chiefs, making a lateral move.
Yes.
And the history that he has interviewing means that I can't get a head coaching job.
Right.
And they don't want me here anymore.
Right.
I need to find something that is at least as good as what I've got right now.
Yeah.
And Washington is probably going to, looks like, give him that opportunity today.
Right.
And, or, you know, in the coming days, whenever it might get finalized, or somebody else might too.
Until but it's finalized, I'm not counting on it yet.
No. But I don't think this has anything to do. Nearly anything to do with the way he interviews, with what people think about him with the Rooney Rule, or anything like that. I think the Chiefs were ready to move on from him last year, but when all this stuff came out, they didn't have the right things in place yet to do that. And then, like you said, the Flores stuff came up, and it's like, this is not a good time to be doing this.
No.
And I think that had a little bit to do with the perception of what might have happened, and the Chiefs don't like dealing with things like that.
No.
And they don't want to be the center of attention and controversy and things like that. And they run a tight ship, and I guarantee you that I think the media has been told, don't even talk about it. We're going to move on from it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a lot of access, by the way, to the inside of the Chiefs and how they run. They've got to find, you've got to get guys like that know the inside stuff, that go find it themselves from other sources that are not just sitting inside the Chiefs, you know, offices telling them what's going on, because that doesn't happen with the Chiefs.
Nope.
You get more of that with the Royals.
Yes.
But the Chiefs, you don't get that stuff.
No, it's tight.
And so you've got to go find it. You got to go work to find it and find out why this is happening. I think as an outsider, it's fairly obvious why Eric Bieniemy hasn't gotten a head coaching job if he's interviewed with 16 teams. He doesn't interview well.
Exactly.
And people don't want him from that aspect of it. But I we've been talking about this in a group for a while. I really do think this was calculated the moment Matt Nagy stepped into this place saying, hey, okay, we'll give you another year here, but be looking for something different, Eric.
Yeah, yeah, and I think people were thinking – well, another year and Bieniemy will for surely get hired as a head coach. He's never even been mentioned hardly at all for a head coaching job this year compared to the last 2 years, yes, which means, like, which is crazy.
The only team that they said interviewed
which
him
is crazy.
Really,
like, which is crazy. Like, you would think if he's been interviewed a hot commodity the last couple of years, wouldn't he be a hot commodity again when they just won the Super Bowl and they had the best offense without Tyreek Hill? And it's instead, he's got to settle for OC options when the Steichen guy from the Eagles and Gannon from the Eagles on the losing Super Bowl team, they're getting jobs right away or interviewing right away. They're the hot commodity. And it's like, well, how can that be? Well, if you've interviewed half the league, the word gets around. And there's probably other teams going, well, I'd interview Bieniemy, but this other owner told me it's a waste of time. Why should I? And so it is. It does seem like a lateral move, and it is a lateral move from OC to OC. And I totally agree with all your points you said. Now, the whole interview thing, that doesn't impact the Chiefs per se, but it does. No, yeah. But it does apply to the rest of the National Football League, and a big reason why Eric Bieniemy apparently is not able to get a head coaching job, because apparently he doesn't interview that well. Because let me tell you something, if he knocked it out of the park with one of those 16 teams, he would not have been the Chiefs coordinator this year. He had been gone, and Nagy would have been the OC. And so, yes, I totally agree that Matt Nagy is sliding into a great situation if Bieniemy goes to the Commanders. Then Matt Nagy is the offensive coordinator. There's always rumors that Nagy's got another guy or two that he wants to bring on staff that he worked with the Bears. Okay? Now, you may say, oh, my God, the Bears, they weren't any good with Nagy. First year, they won the division, went 12-4, and he didn't have Patrick Mahomes. Okay? They actually traded up to get Trubisky one pick, and that was the organization doing that. And then he had teams that were 8-8. They had no quarterback. So Matt Nagy's not a bad head coach. It's just that he did pretty well with what he had, and then it trailed off pretty quickly. I'm not saying he's as good as Andy Reid, but he has a familiarity with the Chiefs. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes, a history with him. And now if he has another guy, like, he slides into the OC spot. Well, now who's your quarterback coach? Maybe it's a guy Matt Nagy's worked with, and now he will slide in the OC spot if Andy Reid retires and Matt Nagy's your head coach, okay? Or maybe Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy will work together again down the line in their careers. Who knows? But to me, I've never thought Eric Bieniemy is the heir apparent to Andy Reid. Never one time have I thought that. And I agree with you. If you can get Bieniemy to go somewhere else, it takes care of that issue of, okay, if Andy has a health issue tomorrow, who's your head coach? And you know who they want. It's clear. And it would have been a horrible look not only last year, it'd still be a bad look this year that you overlook your OC. And it would do a horrible damage to Eric Bieniemy. And he'd probably, that would kill any chance of him being a head coach. If somebody saw, they're looking at getting a new guy to be their head coach, right? They have an opening. And then the Chiefs, Andy Reid has a health issue, and the Chiefs promote Matt Nagy from quarterback's coach to head coach over Eric Bieniemy. You don't think the rest of the league goes, wow, the Chiefs don't even want him as their head coach. Why the heck would I? And the Chiefs, I know Andy Reid loves his assistant coaches. He takes care of them. He helps set them up for success, unlike Bill Belichick did. You look at the coaching tree, and I think Andy's been very, very careful of how he's handled all this to make sure that he doesn't undermine Eric Bieniemy's chances of doing various things. Because I think you're right. All along, Andy's like, he's my OC, but the Chiefs organization is not comfortable as a whole, and maybe even Andy, to take over this team as the head coach. But, hey, if he goes somewhere else, we've got a contingency plan already in place. I totally agree with you with all of that.
And then I think maybe from Eric Bieniemy's point of view also is, like, I've banged my head against this wall 16 times and been told maybe I don't interview well, maybe I'm not a spokesperson type that is going to be able to get that. So maybe his idea now is, okay, I've done it with the quarterback. I've done it with the head coach. It's probably, you know, at least perception-wise, you know, is it really Bieniemy or is it Mahomes? Or is it Andy Reid that's doing all this? Okay, well, now if I just go to an average quarterback with an average team and I knock it out of the park, then tell me I can't have an and that's, but maybe that's his thinking too. I don't know.
I think that's what he's being told.
Yeah.
I think Andy Reid and others are saying, hey, this is your best route to be a head coach. I would still go back to, you can be great at Washington, and if you still don't interview well, if in fact that's true,
right?
And which I don't know how it isn't. I mean, you're 0 for 16 or whatever it is. If he, if why? I mean, how is he suddenly going to be a better guy to be an interview when he's still the same position? Like, it ain't, he ain't going from quarterbacks coach to OC. He's OC to OC. I guess the only thing would be is that if he has full autonomy of the offense, like complete control of the
he
offense.
He runs everything. Yeah.
That would be the, and that, I think that's the selling point.
Yeah.
If that's your last chance, if that's the last thing you think is going to get you to where you want to be as a head coach in the NFL,
then he should do
it. You've got to do it. Yep. And maybe it's not the right thing. Maybe it's not going to, maybe it is going to be like he does it, he does all that.
Yep.
Turns that offense around, and it's clearly his stamp on it, but he's still going to go in and not interview the right way and still not going to get a head coaching job, then that's his final straw that he knows that, okay, it's not going to happen. I guess I'll just stew in this league as an OC for the rest of the
But he knows where he's at. They've been to all those accolades we talked about as a team, and he still hasn't got a head coaching job. So what they say a sign of insanity is continue to do the same thing over and over, expecting a different result.
Yeah.
You've got to mix it up somehow.
If you really want that spot, it's you're not gaining anything by continuing staying. To be on the Chiefs staff, and I think that's a mutual thing, right? Like, I don't think the Chiefs feel they're probably gaining a whole lot if they just continue to go with Eric Bieniemy at offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Matt Nagy is the one that, like you said, at the like told Patrick Mahomes, if you watch the mic'd up too, he's like, "We're in the wrong formation."
Yeah, right.
I know. I was, and Nagy's the one that's yelling that, right? Like, he's the one that really probably has. I would say even this year with him being on the staff probably had more influence on what the Chiefs did offensively than Eric Bieniemy did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I don't know that for a fact, but I would wager a good amount that he had just as much you know, of an imprint and impact on what they were doing. I mean, Andy Reid, we all know, is the one that does it, that makes the final decisions.
Well, listen, they had three offensive coordinators on staff because all those guys have been offensive coordinators. Yeah.
And they've all been except the enemies. Two of them have been head coaches. So it's just like, you know, I felt right away when Matt Nagy came that he was going to be the Chiefs offensive coordinator this coming year
for
the 2023 season.
We talked about it. We even talked about if Bieniemy would – there was talk that – because remember, his contract was up. There was talk Bieniemy was going to be gone after last year, and that's why Nagy came in. And then he just had to wait an extra year. I agree with you. I think that's been the plan. If the Flores situation didn't happen, I think it's possible this would have happened a year earlier. Yeah. Because Bieniemy, I think, still would have got an OC job somewhere. But it does look, like I said, for the regular fan that doesn't follow the Chiefs that tightly and know the background of Eric Bieniemy, it does look like a lateral move. It's like, why would you leave a Super Bowl winning team with an unbelievable quarterback and a great system organization? Why would you leave? And the only reason you would leave is, one, you've been told you need to go, okay, quietly.
Right.
And the other reason would be, you really want to be a head coach. This is the next best option, because clearly this option isn't working, which is crazy, because 95% of the time, if you're an offensive coordinator on a Super Bowl winning or losing team, you're going to get all kinds of interviews and you're going to get a head coaching job that you can either turn down or take. And Eric Bieniemy is one, maybe the only one or one of the very few that hasn't been able to cash in on all the success, because it hasn't been like I said, there are other coaches that have been not calling all the shots as OC, have had shared responsibilities as a head coach that won a Super Bowl, got to a Super Bowl. Andy Reid's an example with Doug Peterson. So that's that. To me, that's a kind of a hollow reasoning. Well, he's in the shadow of Andy Reid. Yeah, well, so was Doug Peterson, and he got a job. So he must have what? Interviewed better? Andy put in a better. Here's the other thing. Do we know exactly the words Andy Reid is saying if people ask about? I'm sure Andy Reid's a reference of some kind, and even if he isn't.
He's going to get called.
I guarantee he's going to get called. And I don't think Andy's going to lie to another organization and say, yeah, take this guy and then implode your organization. And I'm not saying Bieniemy would, but I think Andy Reid would be honest and say, well, I think Eric needs another year or two. Or, you know, yeah, I think he might be a better fit elsewhere. I mean, who knows what Andy's saying? But Andy's not going to sit there and just completely give up his whole reputation and have a guy go to another team and it ends up blowing up in the organization's face and Andy knew all along. That's going to have a little blowback back on Andy. Right. So
You're in a tough spot there. If you don't really like some of the things he does, but I need to be honest with the people that are asking me this, because I don't want to come off as you know, when you know some of those people that recommend somebody, then two weeks later when the guy doesn't last, they're just laughing at the people that they recommended them to, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't want to be in that situation either.
No.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Until it's actually happened, I'm not sold Bienemy's still gone yet.
I mean, yeah,
until
exactly.
it happens. We thought he was gone last year, and he wasn't. So the other Chiefs note, guess who's hosting Saturday Night Live on March 4th?
I know.
Is it Kelsey?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
I figured. I just like, you don't want Mahomes to probably do
Travis that. Travis Kelsey. Well, no, because he'd give away the Lombardi to the studio audience.
Yeah.
but yes, Travis Kelsey's going to be the host of Saturday Night Live on March the 4th with musical star Kelsey Ballerini. Kelsey and Kelsey. Kelsey squared. Yeah, there you go. I'm sure Mahomes will make a cameo of some kind, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or some other Chiefs player, whatever. Clyde Edwards-Helaire did not attend the parade. Supposedly some fashion thing in New York, I read.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I think he's on the way out anyway.
Well, that's what people say. I don't know about that, though. Willie Gay wasn't at the parade either. He had something else going on. Man, I think I would want to be at that parade, but... You know, Melvin Gordon, I think, was at the parade. And he didn't even play at all. Clyde Edwards-Helaire actually helped his team early part of the season.
Yeah.
He ran for like 4.5 yards a carry. Everybody acts like Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a horrible running back. He's not.
I don't think that at all. I think
it's the fact that he was a first-round pick, which, let's admit, he was the last pick of the first round. Everybody acts like he was a middle first-round pick. He wasn't.
Yeah.
In essence, he was really, you know, technically you could almost argue he was a second-round pick. But if he was a third-round pick, there wouldn't be nearly much angst towards Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And he's been a serviceable, good player, but for a first-round pick, that's why he's been disappointing. Okay, so there's a couple Chiefs notes. We're going to get into college basketball coming up. Huge matchup for KU and Baylor. We're going to give you some numbers about Bill Self. We were talking the other day about how Bill Self's the best coach actively in college basketball. Dear Lord, we got some numbers that are going to back that up coming up in a little bit. And the Royals are going to have another member of their franchise Hall of Fame, and we're going to give you a statistic that may blow your mind about the guy that's going into the Royals Hall of Fame. That's coming up in a little bit. But first, we'll go local sports. We got high school hoops and regional wrestling.
Yeah, busy weekend here in high school sports in North Central Kansas. You get things started. High school hoops this evening in the area. Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. Rock Hills traveling to Kensington to face Thunder Ridge. And on Z96.3 through the Lake Bullet Trojan Channel, the Trojans taking on Minneapolis in league play. Other games in the Northern Plains League tonight include Natoma at Lakeside. Osborne is at Chase this evening. St. John's Tipton travels to Sylvan Grove to take on Sylvan Lucas. Wilson's at Pike Valley. And Southern Cloud hosts Tescott in non-league play. Lincoln is hosting Solomon here this evening. And in the Mid-Continent League, Smith Center at home against Trigo tonight. So that's a look at the schedule for this evening. You can find the entire schedule for all the teams in the NCAA NPL always at ncksports.com. Again, on Katy Country 94 tonight, Rock Hills traveling to Thunder Ridge. The girls' game, the Lady Grizzlies 9-9, 6-4 in the NPL. Thunder Ridge is 11-8 and 5-5. And Rock Hills won the first meeting in the NPL Tournament Consolation Semis January 17th, 45-29. Thunder Ridge coach Darren Grauerholtz on what his team might need to do better this time around as they lost the first meeting.
The thing that we got to really be concerned about, I think, is Welsel, number one, number two, the way they run up and down the floor. They got up and down on us in our league tournament, and, you know, it was just one of those deals where we got to be able to withstand those fast break points and be able to play a good, solid defense against Welchel, and I think we should come out on top.
Thunder Ridge has been dealing with a little bit of sickness here lately. They've actually lost two of their last three, so Rock Hills coach Nick Meisner expects them to be ready to go tonight.
Thunder Ridge has had the injury bug get them this year. They've had one or two girls now go down, and I think they've been battling sickness and, you know, dropped the last two out of three, which has been a little surprising, but not when you have injuries and sickness going around either. So they're going to be hungry. They've got a shot at, you know, making a good run at sub-state as well.
Nick Meisner, head coach of the Rock Hills girls basketball team. So, again, Rock Hills Thunder Ridge here tonight in the girls contest. The boys will follow that. The Thunder Ridge and Rock Hills boys meeting for the first time this season. Thunder Ridge 13-6, 8-2 in the league. Rock Hills comes in at 7-10, 4-6 in the NPL. And we were able to catch Rock Hills coach Zach Duffy this week, and he says that Thunder Ridge will be aggressive.
Thunder Ridge will play a really good, strong 2-3 zone that'll force us to create and have to work in space and hit some outside shots, and they'll get up in our face a little bit there on the outside, and of course they have some size on the inside, so that'll be a real good test for us.
Rock Hills at Thunder Ridge tonight. Girls pregame around 5:50. Katy Country 94 with tip-off at 6, and the boys game will follow. Jason will have the call tonight for Rock Hills, Thunder Ridge, and Kensington. Anything you want to add real quick before we move on to Beloit, Minneapolis?
I just think, it oversimplifies it sometimes, but, shooting the basketball, Rock Hills, especially the girls, they've done a lot of good things, breaking presses and doing this and that, but haven't had the shot to go with it. Now, if they can find that, you know, they might be able to give Thunder Ridge a tough game tonight. Rock Hills held a team to just 7 points last time out, so that's a number you can't sneeze at no matter the level of competition. And so it goes back to the other side, too. So Thunder Ridge also trying to piece things together the last couple games with players in and out. Do they hit shots, too? So, you know, I don't want to just label it to one thing, but shot making at this time of year is a big deal, and whichever team could do that. And kind of goes both ways with the boys. When Thunder Ridge is on, Thunder Ridge can score some points. And, you know, Rock Hills just isn't built that way yet. And, you know, if Thunder Ridge has that 15-18-point quarter, they'll could be able to pull away in that one.
I remember last year's game, Rock Hills was starting to get better and better, and they were held to single digits against Thunder Ridge in this game. And as Thunder Ridge came out, and like Jason said, they shot good that night and ended up getting the win. So you just never know at this time of the year. But Rock Hills and Thunder Ridge again in Kensington tonight on Katy Country 94. Then on Z96 Point to the Lake in the Beloit Trojan Channel, it's Minneapolis and Beloit in NCAA League action. I'll actually have the call tonight for that one. The Minneapolis girls 14-5, 7-2 in the NCAA. Beloit coming in at 4-14 and 2-7. You can maybe look at those records and think that Minneapolis is a huge favorite tonight, but they have played already once this year, and Minneapolis beat Beloit by just two the first time, 43-41. So Shauna Remus actually kind of likes the matchup for her girls here tonight.
They're going to give, you know, a lot of defensive pressure on the ball and get up in your face defensively. We match up well against them. Going down to their place is never easy, but we match up well, and we're kind of getting in the flow a little bit more. Kids are, you know, knowing their roles a little bit more, and so that's what we need right now. If we can just play sound defense and hit a few shots and take our opportunities when we get them, I like our chances.
Huge game for Minneapolis because they can win at least a share of the league title with a win tonight, but it is against a team that usually, Beloit, Minneapolis, they're lower scoring games typically. They're grinded out affairs. Both teams usually play really good defense, and it comes down, just piggybacking what Jason said, not to oversimplify it, for Beloit, it's about making shots. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. And making free throws, that's been a major problem. 19 of 45 over the last two games has cost them possibly a win or two. They've been right there in the fourth quarter the last three or four games. They've improved. They're just not getting the wins to show for it. But the last time they played Minnie, as you said, it was a two-point game. But Minnie's got everything in the world to play for tonight in regards to a league title, at least a share. And Beloit can play spoiler. And Beloit can't really help themselves sub-state seeding at all. Looks like they're going to be at Southeast coming up on February the 27th. They'll be the seventh seed. So, you know, for Beloit, I think it's a big game from the standpoint of you could get a win against a really good team that builds some confidence going into the Smith Center game on Tuesday. And then for Minneapolis, you got a chance at a league title. So the girls' game is going to be interesting tonight, and I expect it to be pretty tight.
Yeah, I do too. If Coach Remus is talking like that about the matchup, that she likes it and things like that, and they've played one game that was 2 points, yeah, I'm expecting a good one here this evening as well. So again, the girls will be first, and then following that, the boys game. The boys are 13-5. They're 7-2 in the NCAA. If they can get a couple wins here down the stretch, they could get the wrap up the number two seed in their sub-state. They're looking pretty good already right now for that. They take on a Lions team that is just 2-16 and 1-8. Beloit won 75-31 in that first meeting in January, and Trojans coach Ryan Eilert on what he wants to see tonight from the group.
We want to continue to improve and work on a few things. And, you know, they're going to play us a zone, and we've got to be able to attack that zone. They've got a couple kids that have been scoring the ball better. So we've got to make sure that, you know, just like these past few games, that we're communicating where their guys are and limiting their open looks.
Mason Scott had 21 of Minneapolis's 47 the other night in a win over Public County. That was their second win of the year, 47-25. And he's capable of scoring and filling it up and scoring 20 on a night. Good outside shooter. He's got good size. The question is, does Minneapolis have enough weapons to score enough? And then they play zone. Beloit plays zone typically. So a lot of times it comes out to some outside shooting. And then Beloit has a big advantage, clearly, with Bryce Beisner in the paint against Minneapolis, too. So this is one of those games where if Beloit plays like they have been, they should be all right. But I have seen games where Beloit's gone to Minneapolis. Minneapolis has muddied it up, slowed it down, and, you know, it's a game for a while, and sometimes they even can make it super interesting in the fourth quarter. I hear Coach Eilert's going to go to the movies instead tonight. He's letting Eric Lampert take over because he won movie tickets this morning, I saw. What was the movie that he knew?
Air Force One.
I thought you were going to say Magic Mike. Okay, Air Force. I hope he's listening right now. I would love to have a camera and see his face right now. He probably rolled his eyes like
that. That was definitely an eye roll. There's no question.
No eye roll. Yeah, eye roll.
There was definitely an eye roll.
Yeah.
No, get off my plane.
No. No, I better not get in trouble. I was going to say something. Won't. Yeah, Air Force One, that's what it was. Huh? Uh-huh. Wasn't snakes on a plane?
No, not snakes on a plane.
I just saw a plane, by the way.
I can't. Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. You want my honest opinion of planes?
Yeah, please.
It's okay.
Yeah. Great title. Great title for a movie. Yeah.
To me, it was very predictable. My oldest and I went. It was like he didn't have nothing to do at the time. And I said, hey, you want to go with me? Because, I mean, mom will go with me, but, you know, it's a action movie, rated R or whatever. And he's like, looked at the trailer, said, yeah, sure. After the movie, I said, what'd you think? He said, eh. Predictable. I'm like, yeah. I'm not going to disagree. It had action, so it was okay. It was entertaining enough. I didn't get bored. I didn't fall asleep. But so you say Air Force One, and I think a plane,
right.
snakes on a plane.
Can't use
else.
The snakes.
You can't use the best quote. Yeah.
Right.
No, we can't use that.
I'm
no.
tired of these.
Yeah. You can't use any quote for Samuel L. Jackson, to be quite honest with you. So he knew Air Force One, Harrison Ford. Huh?
Yep. Get off my plane.
Yeah. That dates him a little bit. That movie's old.
It is.
Which means I'm old because I remember when it came out, too.
Old.
So anyway, I think Coach Eilert will be one Coach Eilert for sure. There are probably two Coach Eilerts, but with Eric, too. But no, I think he'll go to the movies another time. But tonight, Beloit, Minneapolis boys, and Beloit certainly be a heavy favorite in that. All right, anything else?
No, we'll cover that. Again, that's on the Beloit Trojan Channel at pregame at 5:50 on Z96 Point Through the Lake as well. So, looking forward to that. The final games of the North Central Activities Association season for Beloit. It's actually the final game of the regular season for Minneapolis tonight. So, again, catch it all here this evening with High School Hoops.
I get to scream at the officials tonight and get away with it even more, or I'm going to get kicked out because
this is
I can't get away with
Friday
it.
Friday night off in a row now.
Yeah, well, it's not really off when
well,
you're
you know,
a kid.
You know what I mean.
But technically, on the air it is, but it's the other ones I didn't have
you
to be at a game.
You didn't even have to be there, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And nervous or whatever it might be as a parent even.
Yeah, know? I don't get nervous for those games, not yet. I think Substate might be a little different. Yeah, but yeah, looking forward to it. It will be fun down there. All right, we got regional wrestling, man. Here we go. It's hard to believe we're winding down the winter sports season.
Yeah, in Beloit tomorrow, I do like the fact that it's a one-day deal, so I don't have to be worried about trying to find results while I'm covering basketball.
That is nice. So, thank you.
Again, tomorrow only, the 3-2-1A Boys Regional Tournament taking place there in Beloit. 27 wrestlers from 5 area schools will be taking the mats in the one-day tournament. There will be 23 teams competing. 5 of those are ranked in 3-2-1A. Norton's number 3, Smith Center number 4, Minneapolis number 5, Republic County's number 7, and Hill City number 9. It stretches from like St. Francis in northwest Kansas all the way to Belleville, kind of a northern Highway 2436 type regional that we've got here. So going down, obviously, from Minneapolis area. But individually, there are 30 ranked wrestlers at this regional for the host school Beloit. Their top wrestler all season has been Brogan Monty. He's the lone ranked wrestler for the Trojans. He enters at 34-0, number one in the state at 106 pounds. So Beloit, obviously, will be looking at Monty to qualify for state, hoping they maybe can get a couple more through. But their head coach, Andy Nemchek, knows it'll be tough with the great competition that's coming this year to Beloit.
This region is probably the toughest region that we've been placed in quite a few years, and it's going to be very tough. So some of the weight classes are really, really loaded, and our kids are going to have to battle like crazy. 23 teams in the region. Of course, Brogan Monty comes into the region undefeated and certainly is favored in his weight class. We're hoping for great things, and having the region in our home gym is certainly an advantage, and we're excited about hosting the region.
Again, that's Beloit Coach Andy Nemchek. Beloit has 10 wrestlers total taking the mat. Caden Anderson's the lone previous state qualifier. He made it in 2019, excuse me, at 138 pounds. He's wrestling 150 here this year. So Caden looking to get back as a senior to state after he had made it in 2019 as well. So kind of looking at the other teams, Osborne does have some wrestlers. Actually, before I get to that, Beloit will be coaching. The Beloit coaches will coach Cody Nielsen of Rock Hills. He wrestles with Beloit during the season, but as is the case always, you have to break off and compete for your own school here once you get to the postseason. So here at Regionals, Cody Nielsen of Rock Hills will be wrestling. He did qualify for state last year for the Grizzlies, so that's the second state qualifier under the Beloit coach umbrella that will be looking to get back to state this year. Jason Knoll, he'll be coaching 4 athletes for Osborne, 1 for Lakeside on Saturday. Chris Heiss is the lone ranked wrestler, as he's 39-9, number six in the state at 175 there for the Bulldogs. Noel thinks that, his kids are ready to go here for this weekend.
Everyone's got a shot. I mean, looking at brackets and everything, we got to win a couple hard matches to get in, but I think we're ready to go. We're fine-tuning a lot of stuff, a lot of drilling this week, so it's going to be tough. We're going to have to beat someone that we haven't beat all year, but that's every regionals.
So, yeah, Osborne again with four wrestlers for the Bulldogs, and then Grant Middleton will be wrestling for Lakeside as well, so that's coming up here today. Also, for Smith Center, they've actually got the largest number of wrestlers, competitors from the area that are competing. They're scheduled to put 11 wrestlers on the mats. Four of them are ranked. Bentley Montgomery is number one at 150 at 40-1. Eli Franklin is 35-5, number two at 215 pounds. Alec Wilkinson, 30-8, and number four at 144. Carson Montgomery enters at 29-13. He's number five at 285 pounds. Redmond coach Brock Hutchinson wants his wrestlers to give max effort at all times in their quest for state.
We're going to step on the mat and we're going to give it our all. It's compete. That's the bottom line for us. It's when you step on the mat, don't matter who it is that you're wrestling, just go out and compete and show that opponent that no matter if they're ranked, no matter if you're above them and you're ranked, you just compete and you just get out there and give it your all.
Again, Smith Center will have an opportunity here to get some of their kids to the state wrestling tournament. Everything gets started tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning, so be looking for that. We'll have reports coming up tomorrow throughout the day on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. We'll get things started at 10 o'clock with kind of a preview, and then we'll roll in with the results once we start getting those in as well. Again, the 3218 Regional Wrestling Tournament in Beloit tomorrow for our area athletes.
Yeah, state wrestling coming next Friday and Saturday out at Hayes. And then we'll have sub-state basketball late next week for the smaller schools. And then everybody kicks in the week after that. And then state basketball's after that. And then spring break. And then, boom, spring sports.
Boom.
Boom. Tough acting, ten acting. All right. College basketball, huge game in Lawrence tomorrow. Number five, Kansas, hosting number nine, Baylor. Second meeting of the season. Baylor won the first one by six on January 23rd in Waco. KU 21-5, tied atop the Big 12 standings with Texas and Baylor at 9-4. It's a 3 o'clock tip-off tomorrow and pregame at 2:30 on Z96.3 Lake. Baylor started the year 0-3 in Big 12 play. They won 9 of the last 10 in the Big 12, so perhaps they're the hottest team in the Big 12. Here's Bill Self on the Baylor guards, maybe the best backcourt in America.
There's no team in America that's got three guards like they got, and they can all get their own, and they can create for others. Keontae's a terrific passer, has great vision, and, you know, they're hard to guard because they can take and make, you know, hard shots. Shots that you say, no, good shot, and they're all really good at that.
Well, Kansas, if they could win tonight, and then they win Monday on the road at TCU, and TCU is supposed to have two of their starters back due to injury as soon as possibly tomorrow when they host Oklahoma State. And KU got drilled by TCU, so KU's going to have motivation, no doubt, going to Fort Worth, although last year they lost at Fort Worth, and that was their last loss of the year as they ran the table after that. And there are people wondering what's wrong with KU after that loss, I remember. That's why it's so fleeting. You can't overreact to just one loss or one win because it is a marathon, not a sprint. So you look at the what Kansas has left. They have Baylor at home, at TCU. If Kansas could win those two, they're 11-4. And then you've got West Virginia at home, Texas Tech at home. The ideal situation for KU is have the Big 12 title wrapped up before you go to Austin to close out the Big 12 regular season on March the 4th. And then watch Travis Kelce on Saturday Night Live later that evening.
Yeah.
You look at Baylor. Baylor, they have, of course, KU on the road tomorrow. And then Baylor is at K-State. And then Baylor hosts Texas. Baylor's at Oklahoma State. And Baylor hosts Iowa State. That's murder, man. That's crazy good, tough schedule. Of course, Big 12's tough no matter what. But there's no doubt that Baylor has a tougher schedule the rest of the way than KU does. So that's why tomorrow is just a huge game for both teams. And then if you look at Texas, Texas tomorrow, they host Oklahoma. They should win that. They host Iowa State. I would guess they win that since Iowa State struggles on the road. Although that's not a for sure gimme. They got to go to Baylor, and Texas has to go to TCU yet.
before they host Kansas. So if you looked at the three teams, Baylor, Kansas, and Texas, and said who has the easiest stretch, which there's no easy stretch in this conference, but who has the easier of the three, wouldn't you say KU does?
Oh, I think so.
Especially if they win tomorrow against Baylor at home.
Yeah, they get that one out of the way, and then if they get that win, then I definitely agree with that.
I still think they can split the next two, and I think they'll probably still get a share of the Big 12 title. Mm-hmm. And who knows? Maybe you go 13 and when you get it outright too. But there's no doubt KU has the better schedule. So tomorrow, huge game, KU and Baylor. We were talking the other day about Bill Self, the best coach in America in college basketball. And there's really no debate. I mean, you can make up a debate. Everybody can make up a debate and make up their own facts, which means they're not facts. If you make up something, it's not a fact. Can we all at least agree on that?
I would hope,
but believe it or not, there are people that wouldn't. So has Kansas been the best basketball program in college hoops since Bill Self was hired in 2004? That was a question thrown out there. Because that's when he got hired, 2004, after Roy and KU went to the national championship game. First year, Bill Self as coach had mostly Roy Williams players, and they went the Elite Eight and lost in overtime to Georgia Tech. I was there to see that in St. Louis. The very next year, he had a team that was probably not as good, but was started like 20-0 and was number one team in America for a while, and then eventually was a three, and then lost to, I think that was the Bucknell loss. So since Bill Self has been hired, so we've got about 20 years. This is his 20th year, I believe, as a head coach. Here's what Bill Self has done. All right. 573 wins, 129 losses. That's 82%. He wins 82% of his games. He has 25 Big 12 titles combined. And what that means is conference titles, regular season, and Big 12 tournament titles. Mm-hmm. And we know he's won. He's got a chance at what? Number 17 this year, I think it is, out of 20? He had 14 in a row. I think Brian said this would be 17, or he's had 17, which is insane. He's had 10 30-plus win seasons. Half of the time at Kansas, he wins 30 or more. Mm-hmm. Like, the standard usually is if you can get to 20 or more, that's awesome. 30 or more, 10 times. He's been to 11 Sweet 16s, which is poo-pooed by a lot of KU fans because they take it for granted. 11 Sweet 16s. And people could say, well, they should make it Sweet 16. They're a one seed. Yeah, that tells you how great Bill Self is because he's never been worse than a four seed. So that pretty much guarantees a Sweet 16 berth. Yes. 9 Elite Eights. That's once every 2 years. The knock on Bill is he doesn't win enough of the Elite Eights, which is the toughest game to win in a tournament, and it is a crapshoot sometimes. 4 Final Fours, 1 national runner-up, 3 national championship game appearances, and 2 national championships. Now, that pales in comparison to what the Chiefs have done the last 5 years, but that tells you how good the Chiefs have been. Because Bill Self, what he's done at KU is remarkable. And on top of that, he's done it against some of the best players you've probably, Kevin Durant, Michael Beasley. We're talking about great players in the Big 12. Texas was really good there for a spell. Every team's kind of had a little bit of a rotation, had a shot. K-State had a year, of course, with Beasley and Walker, but then also they had another year where they were co-champs in the Big 12. And so there have been good teams for different programs over the years during that stretch, but the only consistent one has been Kansas. That's the only school in the Big 12 that's been consistent over 20 years. And then they get the national title last year, and now this year they're ranked in the top 5, and they have a chance at another Big 12 title when they lost 2 first-round picks and another guy that was very important in David McCormick. Listen, there is no debate. You know, just like there should be no debate about who the best quarterback in the National Football League is. All right? Bill Self is the best coach in college basketball, and that gives Kansas a huge advantage when you get into tight games. And yes, you can sit here and say, well, KU gets calls at home. They do. I don't think Bill Self will even deny that. Yeah, they get some calls at home. There's also many other teams that are really good to get calls at home. Kansas isn't the only one. But the fact that Bill Self has as many conference titles as home losses, which is 16, I do believe, right now, that's insane as well. And it's also, he isn't playing the Gonzaga WCC schedule here. He's playing some of these first-round NBA talents, great players. I mean, we saw Jacob Pullen have an amazing night against Kansas and beat him one time. I mean, it's just insane how consistent Bill Self has been. And there is no, you know, Patrick Mahomes talks about, I don't know what rebuilding is. Neither does Bill Self.
No.
Because they just retool. That's all it is. They reload. I call it reloading. They just reload. And here we are. And
And he doesn't have the number one pick in the draft every year, hardly ever. You know, he had Wiggins. He had Wiggins and then Embiid was hurt. Or this number would be different. If Embiid never got hurt, this number would be different, wouldn't it? Because they wouldn't have lost to Stanford in the second round. All right? Elite Eight, if Josh Jackson doesn't get in foul trouble early in the game, Devontae Graham goes 0 for 10 from 3, they'd probably beat Oregon. We could go on and on. There's all kinds of opportunities Kansas has just missed out on. Now, there's a few that caught breaks on, of course. Davidson, that could have Curry shoots the ball and shoot instead of passing it, makes a three. KU maybe doesn't even win a national title in 08, and Bill Self's not even the head coach after 2010. If John Calipari and his team actually fouled when he asked them to foul, up three with 10 seconds to go against KU in 08, Bill Self doesn't have a national championship there either, probably. But the fact that he, and this is something I was talking with my good friend Kansas City about last night, there are a lot of similarities between KU and the Chiefs from this standpoint. That, and Jay Billis said it last year as well, if you keep knocking on the door and you're always in position to win a title, you're going to break through the door from time to time at the very least. And think about it. He broke through last year. Of all the teams Bill Self's had, that team last year might have ranked 10th out of 20. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I might be being generous. And they are one of two teams to win the national championship. The Chiefs have gone to 5 straight AFC title games, and we were talking about this, the margin of error, right? So if Bill Self, 08, Chalmers doesn't hit the shot, and Memphis fouls, and Memphis hits free throws, Bill Self doesn't win a title in 08. Last year, they're down 15 points to North Carolina. Carolina doesn't, you know, fall apart defensively. If Remy Martin, if Christian Brown doesn't make a buzzer-beating three, shot clock, and Remy Martin doesn't come back from injury, Bill Self doesn't win a title last year either. And we could be talking about the great coach that can't win the big one. But he has won the big one twice. He's been to it three times. You look at the Kansas City Chiefs. This is how the narrative changes so quickly. Guys, we were saying before the Bengals game that the Chiefs have to win this game. Because, wait a minute. I thought this is a retooling, a rebuilding year. This is a great accomplishment to get this far. It's like, no, you can't lose to the Bengals back-to-back years at home. You can't go 2-3 at home in the AFC title game. And you can't just have one Super Bowl win in 5 years if you want to be considered such a great team. And all and with two wins, two very narrow three-point wins, penalties playing a role in each one of them. Mm-hmm. Not saying they weren't right. They were the right calls. Think about the if that ball doesn't bounce up to Nick Bolton nice and easy, that might be a field goal instead of a touchdown. Or if Hurts doesn't just drop the ball, the Eagles go down, go up 21-7. We don't know if the Chiefs win the game. The margin for error is so slim. But think about this. If the Chiefs go to overtime against the Bengals, I'm convinced the Bengals win that game. The Chiefs had hardly any receivers healthy. Mahomes was just trying to scramble to get a first down to somehow get in field goal range. I think the Bengals win in overtime. We'll never know, and I'm glad it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But if the Chiefs lose that game, or even the Eagles in the Super Bowl, we're talking about one ring in 5 years. If you lose to the Bengals, well, you went 2-3 in the AFC title game. That's just not acceptable, right? You're losing record, and you had 5 straight at home. You only got one Super Bowl win, and you had the rally in the fourth quarter. Maybe that was a little bit fluky. And now, after 2 3-point wins, what's the talk?
Dynasty.
The Chiefs, and you know, and so if you play the law of averages, the Chiefs are knocking on the door, obviously, every year. With Mahomes, 5 straight years, AFC title game. You know, are you supposed to go 5-0 in those AFC title games? No, you're not. 4-1 would be really good, but 3-2 is about where you should be. 2-3 is unacceptable, but 3-2, you got to be above 500. And then, if you're going to go to 3 Super Bowls in 5 years, it's okay if you don't win all three, but you got to win two. And this is what the Chiefs are. The Chiefs are hitting 67%, right? Mm-hmm. They're 3 out of 5 in the AFC title game. That's 60%, and they are 67%, 2-1 in the Super Bowl. That's the law of averages. Now that could easily be flipped. They could be 2-3, and they could be 1-2 in Super Bowls. That's very easy. Could easily have happened. And that's the slow, small margin of error you have in any sport. And KU is a perfect example of it. And clearly the Chiefs are too. And a little thing here or there changes the whole scope of a coach's career and a player's career. You know, if Jim Kelly and Scott Norwood makes that field goal against the Giants, perhaps the Bills win the Super Bowl the next year. Who knows? We don't know. What happens if Elway wins a Super Bowl early in his career? Is he thought of differently? Or does he win a couple at the end, or he doesn't because they got their Super Bowl and they're satisfied?
He might walk away sooner too.
He might.
Right.
Dan Marino, if he gets a Super Bowl right off the bat, he's thought of differently today, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
A lot different.
So it is interesting how the narrative changes so quickly with just maybe one play deciding a game, or a free throw, or a shot clock, or Chalmers barely getting over Derrick Rose's finger. I mean, if Rose would have not cut his fingernails and had them long, he might have got a piece of that. That was how close that was. And so we talk about the greatness of Patrick Mahomes, the greatness of Andy Reid, the greatness of, you know, Bill Snyder at Kansas State, the greatness of Bill Self at Kansas. But you need a few breaks, and you need a little bit of luck or something to bounce your way. And the point of the story I'm trying to make is when you get there almost all the time, it's not always going to go against you. You're going to break through. Now, are you going to break through 30% of the time, 60% of the time, 80% of the time, 10% of the time? That I don't know. But if you get there often enough, you're going to win. It's like Sarin says from 810 WHB in Kansas City, I think he put it so well, that Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes are a Super Bowl contender every year he's healthy. Forget what's around him. They are a contender every single year. There are going to be years when the Chiefs are going to be really good and they're not going to win at all. And there are going to be a few years the Chiefs are going to steal one because they're going to be there all the time. And I think a lot of people believe that the Chiefs stole one this year. And I kind of do. And I think the Chiefs, if not for Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher getting hurt, that was the Super Bowl they should have had and been back-to-back, which would change the narrative because you went back-to-back, but you might not have won it this year. So it is very interesting if you can get there consistently. And the great ones do. Tom Brady and the Patriots did. The Cowboys in their prime did. The Niners did. The Steelers back in the 70s did. Obviously, UCLA did. The Chiefs have done it. The Jayhawks do it. You know, Duke did there for a time. Now Coach K's gone. Who knows? But when you get there often enough, you're going to break through. The Royals had to get there back-to-back years to break through. Now, they don't get there every year, but they got a second chance on life, and they cashed it. And to me, that is what you look at is you might have that fluky run. And maybe Hubert Davis had that fluky run last year. We don't know. Time will tell. But when you put yourself like Bill Self does and you win 30-plus games 10 out of 20 years, you win the conference title almost every year, yeah, you're going to have a shot at a national title, and you should win a few. And yeah, he has.
And I think that like any team that's been a fan of these kind of teams, you're talking KU basketball, I'm talking – you're talking, we're all talking Chiefs, I'm talking Spurs,
yeah,
as a fan of them. When you're a fan of a team that's always there,
yeah,
you can actually go back and look, and you love all the championships that you get, but you'll go back and look at some of the other teams that you've watched as a fan and be like, how did this team do it, but this team didn't even get, like the Spurs' best record in their franchise history didn't even make the Western Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. They got beat by the Thunder. And so it's like, man, like,
that team was.
You just think like this team won the championship. This team didn't even get to the conference finals. Like this is the best team I've ever seen from my favorite team. Like in an individual season, and I can look at K-State like that too in football. You know, we're not talking national titles, but we're talking Big 12 championships, right? Like they won it in 2003. 2002 team was way better than the 2003 team, but just for one fact that it had Terrence Newman on it, right? And he could do a lot of different things. And so you kind of look at those teams, and you're like, now 98 was obviously the biggest and best, and
dominant, and didn't win the Big 12 title.
They didn't win a Big 12 championship. They made it to the game, but they didn't win it, and had a chance to make the national championship. 98 is leaps and bounds better than 2012 that won the championship.
Just like 97 KU basketball with their 34-1, they only lost in double overtime in Columbia. Jared Hass gets hurt, didn't help them, but they lost Sweet 16 Arizona, who ended up winning the whole thing. That team is the best KU team I've ever seen when I've been alive, and they didn't even get out of the Sweet 16.
And 98 is no question the best team K-State football has had.
Absolutely.
There's no. If you weren't born, you can try to argue with me. You're going to lose that argument every time.
Absolutely.
And so it's just, and I'm sure Jason is a Nebraska fan, sees that too. You know, back when he was growing up, you know, some of the Nebraska teams that probably should have won, maybe didn't, and then they break through and win a couple in a row. But it's like you can look at all these teams, and I think the ones that I remember the most are the ones that you're disappointed that they didn't win it. Like,
well,
this team, like, and it's just the way it is once you start winning all the time. And there's no question to me, health-wise, if they're completely healthy, the team that lost to the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl for the Chiefs is a way better overall team than what they had this year.
Well, I was going to say,
I think you're right.
I mean, I feel that way with the weapons and things that they had. Now, they structured this year's team to fit what they could do well.
This team was more balanced.
But I think as far as a dominant team that could maybe flip a switch and then and could blow somebody out,
right,
the team
That was the team.
Their 2020 season was better than this
year. Well, they were 14-1 with their starters.
Exactly.
Or even, I was going to say last year, if it just wasn't for a bad half against the Bengals, yes. I think that team is probably better than this year's team.
See, now I disagree with that one. I heard somebody else say that. I don't think so. I don't think last year's team was better than this year's team. I think people get caught up in the sexy part of the offense there. I don't think that the defense last year was not as good as
this year's
defense.
They started 3-4. Like, I can't go that far with that. But yeah. I get what you're saying. Maybe by the end of the year, you might have felt that way.
Maybe, could be by the way they're playing at the end
of the
year.
At the time that the games happened.
I would buy that because they came on and the Chiefs late this year had the scare against the Texans. Special teams was atrocious at times, things like that. Yeah. But I don't think the team overall was better last year. So, but the 2020 team, I don't think there's any doubt if that team when it's healthy, it was 16 and one on the field, 16 and one, and they didn't and they didn't win it. And this year's team lost to the Colts for crying out loud,
right?
And they won it. It is interesting how it all breaks down. And I've heard people like with Chiefs fans. Oh, we were so close to being in the Super Bowl 5 years in a row. Dee Ford wasn't offsides, and if we didn't go for the touchdown before halftime and kick the field goal, we had been in the Super Bowl 5 straight years. I'm like, okay, you want to play this game? Sure, let's play this game. So, yeah, that's true, but if Patrick Mahomes, the pass rush is a half second faster on 3rd and 15 on WASP, that's an incomplete pass, and the Chiefs are punting on 4th and 15, down by 10 against the Niners in the Super Bowl and don't win the Super Bowl. If there is not a hold on Bradbury at the end of the game, it's possible that the Chiefs don't win that one. And if the Bengals guy would have held up and not gone after Mahomes on the sideline, that might have gone to overtime. The Chiefs would have lost that. I could argue the Chiefs should only have two, and that's what they do have. And people are getting greedy going, well, we could easily been in five. You easily could have been zero rings during this 5 year span. Mm-hmm. Isn't it convenient how people do that?
Yeah. They always go one way, but never think to go.
Like Patriot fans, well, if Marshawn or Patriot fans say, well, if David Tyree didn't have that catch, and if Manningham didn't make that one handed catch on the sideline, and we didn't play Eli Manning, well, those two plays cost us. Brady'd have 9 rings. Yeah, 9 rings. He also, if there isn't a tuck rule, they don't win their first Super Bowl because they had lost the game and they went back and reviewed it and called the tuck rule, and that started the dynasty. Oh yeah, and even that year they needed a last second field goal. If that's missed by Vinatieri, you don't beat the Rams. Oh yeah, Marshawn Lynch, if he gets the ball at the one, you don't win that Super Bowl. You're down 28-3 if the Falcons had a brain. Okay, you wouldn't have won that one. I could argue the Patriots should be 3-7 in Super Bowls, and they can come back and say, well, we should be 9-1 because. And you're right. There's nobody wrong, but you're looking at it as if everything went your way, you'd be 9-1. And well, if everything went against you, you might have been 3-7, 2-8 in those Super Bowls, or didn't even make it to 10 Super Bowls. And the same thing with the Chiefs. And so where is it? If you go to 10 Super Bowls, you should be 5-5. That's what you should be. Mm-hmm. You should be around 500. That's the law of averages. The Patriots exceeded that. They went 7-3. If the Chiefs go to 5 Super Bowls and go 4-1, they've exceeded those expectations. And that's the key. To be a great team in a dynasty, you've got to exceed the percentages. You've got to exceed them. Now, if you're a good team that wins a few titles here and there, that's great, but your odds are 50-50. They are. And with the parity in all these leagues, we see it in college basketball, we see it in the NCAA tournament with a crapshoot, we see great teams lose in the second round, Sweet 16, Elite 8 to teams you don't think they have any business losing to. Kentucky was 40-0 and lost to Wisconsin national semis. UNLV had beaten Duke the year before by 30 and lost the very next year in the Final Four, and people forget that Duke and UNLV did not meet in the finals because Duke beat Kansas in the championship after that. It's hard to win titles. It's hard to be good every year. And that goes back to my point, why Bill Self's so damn good. I mean, it is insane. The only constant with Kansas in the last 20 years is one person.
Bill Self.
Bill Self.
Yeah, in college sports, it's going
to
be that way.
It has to be. Yeah.
And you list some of those accomplishments, and, you know.
And he's that's not
over,
done yet.
Right, and that's over 20 years and stuff like that. Like, you take a team, well, I'll just use the one I know. Like, you take a team like Creighton, who doesn't have to apologize to anybody for the last 5 years of what they've done. But, you know, they don't have the title. They don't have the Final Four. But, like, they have some of the Sweet 16s and something like that. And that's – and Bill Self just destroys that. And it's consistent every year. And it's just like, whoa, you know, North Carolina doesn't have to apologize to anybody for what they've done the last 5 years either. But it's not Bill Self. It's not, you know, Tom Izzo has some of those the same accomplishments, but it's over a longer span. And so, yeah, I would put Bill Self up, you know, with anybody.
And Bill Self, it says here, they've done the research. Bill Self's accomplished more in 20 years at KU than 95% of college basketball programs have done all time.
Right.
So in 20 years, he's done more than 95% of college basketball programs in their history. Let that sink in for a second. All right, so KU-Baylor, big game tomorrow, 3 o'clock, pregame 2:30 on Z96.3, The Lake. K-State hosting number 19, Iowa State at 1 o'clock on ESPN. K-State's got to figure some things out. They've lost 5 of the last 6 in conference play. Cyclones won the first meeting in Ames by 4. And Jerome Tang, he's confident that they're going to figure things out.
It's disappointing, but it's not, like, disheartening, you know, like, we're going to figure this thing out because we have really good dudes in that locker room and they care. You know, the care factor is high. And everybody's going through different things at different times, all the things that every team in the country is dealing with right now. And so those are just things that you have to work through. And it's part of being in the best league in America and having a chance, you know, to play in the NCAA tournament.
K-State 19-7 overall, 7-6 in the Big 12. Iowa State, a game out of first at 8-5, be a huge win for Iowa State, clearly, if they can get one on the road. K-State, of course, to still have a shot at maybe a share of the title, they're probably going to have to win out. They just got to win. We forget the Big 12 title right now. K-State's got to hold serve at home and gain some confidence, don't they?
Yeah, I have put the Big 12 title thing on the back burner three games ago because they're just the focus just hasn't been what it was maybe early in the Big 12 season. The defense isn't where it needs to be. We know that. But, yeah, it's just about going out and executing and just winning right now. Don't worry about what your conference record is. Don't worry about what your opponent might do if maybe you can overtake them in the standings. Don't worry about any of that. Just go out and win. Obviously, you got to understand who your opponent is and their strengths and weaknesses. That's what scouting's for. But, this team needs a victory tomorrow just to get some confidence back, just to get back in the right direction.
Travis Kelce was singing on Fallon's show last night.
I saw that, yeah.
I did not see that. I'm going to see that here. I don't know if it's going to – yeah, anyway, we'll see how that goes. So K-State tomorrow, big game against Iowa State. Every game is big now, obviously. Other Big 12 games, Texas Tech at West Virginia, 11 a.m. tomorrow. Number 6, Texas hosts Oklahoma at 1. Oklahoma State's at number 22, TCU at 1 o'clock. Women's hoops, K-State women, 15-11, 4-9 in the Big 12. They have to win to keep their chances alive to get to the NCAA tournament. You can't lose to a winless team in conference, and that's what TCU is, 0-13. 5 o'clock tip-off tomorrow on ESPN Plus from Fort Worth. KU women are 16-8, 6-7 in the Big 12. They've got a big game hosting number 18 Oklahoma. That helped their resume if they knock off the Sooners. That's at 2 o'clock on ESPN Plus, and that's actually on Sunday. That one. And we close with Royals baseball. Yesterday, the Royals announced the 27th member of their franchise's Hall of Fame in his first chance on the ballot. No shocker, the club's all-time winningest manager, Ned Yost, was selected for the Royals Hall of Fame. Ned had 746 wins from 2010 to 2019 as the Royals manager. That's 336 more than second place on the list. He did have a losing record, but that's because he inherited some bad teams. Yost also led the Royals to a 22-9 postseason record. More on that in a moment. Of course, the World Series championship in 15, the World Series runner-up in 14, and if Royals fans were in charge, Ned Yost would have been fired in 2014, along with Dayton Moore when they were 48-50. And Billy Butler accurately said, we're a second-half team. We're, like, all laughing. And he'll be right.
Billy.
And Billy may get in the Hall of Fame, too.
Okay, Billy.
Billy may be in the Hall of Fame for the Royals, too. Yost is the first person picked for the Royals Hall of Fame since Mike Sweeney in 2015. His induction will take place on the field at Kauffman Stadium September 2nd, prior to the Royals game against the Boston Red Sox. All right, I teased earlier that I have a fact, a stat, a nugget that will blow you away. The all-time winningest postseason manager by winning percentage is?
It's Ned Yost.
It's Ned Yost. Ned Yost has the best winning percentage of any manager in postseason baseball history. There's a criteria of so many games. 22-9, which is 71%. Ned Yost. Some people called him a dunce. People all said Yosted. We even used it on our show. I used it in the wild card game when they brought Ventura in to face Moss and he hit a home run. We were all chanting Yosted. We were Yosted when they wouldn't bring Wade Davis in Game 6 ALCS. But after that happened, think about this. After that rain delay in Game 6 when they blew the lead because Madsen came in to pitch to Bautista, we all knew what was coming.
And I'm above the high B sign on TV, still shot. Only I'm up in arms about right up a coronary, and my head's about to explode because we all knew it was coming. And we got Yosted. And then Wade Davis came in after the rain delay. Like, why didn't you bring him? I mean, come on, man. So actually, he came in right before, and then he rested, came back. And that was the whole idea was he didn't want to bring Wade in, and then he did anyway. But Lorenzo Cain, scoring from first on a single by Eric Hosmer, won the game for the Royals. Wade Davis got out of bases loaded, no out jam in the bottom top of the ninth to get the pennant, so he didn't have to go to a game seven. And after that, it seemed like Ned Yost, everything he did was golden. It was pretty much golden. You know, you think about it, you know, 15, clearly it was golden because the World Series, all the moves he made, made sense, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't start Cueto on the road. You know, he had the right guys starting. He had the bullpen, which he said it wasn't that hard to figure out. I got that.
Yeah.
I give the seventh here, the eighth. But in his credit, he established that.
Yeah, for sure.
He established that. He set roles, and they always had talks beforehand. You got the seventh, you got the eighth, you got the ninth. They always knew when they were coming in, they knew the role. And then, of course, in 14, in game seven, they knew that, hey, we're going to have to probably throw 6 to 7 innings out of our bullpen. Guthrie's going to go two and a third, whatever we got to do, hopefully win against the Giants. That didn't work out. But isn't that insane that a guy that has a career losing record as a manager goes to a team, Trey Hillman gets fired, he was hired as a consultant, and everybody at the time, just like Matt Nagy getting hired with the Chiefs, everybody at the time said, no, Ned Yost is going to be the manager in waiting with the Royals. And sure as heck, boom, it happened. And that's what we're saying here with Nagy being the OC and maybe the coach in waiting for the Chiefs, which we'll find out for right years from now, possibly. But Ned Yost is the all-time winningest manager in Royals history. He is the greatest postseason manager in Major League Baseball history percentage-wise. He went to back-to-back World Series and won a World Series. He's going to the Royals Hall of Fame. Who saw that coming back in 2013 or even 14?
Yeah, you wouldn't.
Nobody did.
Yeah.
It is insane. And I am just forever in debt to Ned Yost and Dayton Moore because those two guys gave me two of the funnest years of my life because I never dreamt that the Royals would ever be good again because of the way baseball was. And I think Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Gerard Dyson, Salvador Perez, I could list the whole team for crying out loud. I thank Dayton Moore for making trades for Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist and being all in and going for it. It's just something that I'll never forget. I was able to share it with my oldest son, and just the memories just trickle back, and it's hard to believe it's been 7, 8 years now. But I am just, you know, this is an example of believing in a guy you hired, sticking with the guy you hired, and it's also give Matt Yost a lot of credit. He had to go through and endure a lot of losing.
Absolutely.
He knew he was coming into a losing organization when he signed on. And he knew the talent down in the minors, and he said all along that the Royals were going to be good. He said that all along when he wasn't even the manager. He said these young guys have a chance to be great. And when Alcides Escobar was struggling at shortstop when he was up and he wasn't hitting worth a lick and he kept putting him in the lineup, people said, why is Alcides Escobar in the lineup? He said, because he's going to be a very important part of our future. And he stuck with Alcides Escobar. Then he even put him in the leadoff spot. And people were like, what is wrong with Ned? But it worked. It somehow worked. The guy was a free-swinging leadoff man, hit the leadoff inside the park home run to start the World Series. I mean, Ned Yost deserves a ton of credit because, remember, he didn't have the greatest starting rotation. He had to piece it around Edison Volquez, Chris Young, for crying out loud, okay? He had Yordano Ventura. But he did not have an ace on that staff. He never did. Danny Duffy wasn't even playing barely in 14. I think he was hurt in 15, if I remember correctly. He didn't even start. I mean, Ned Yost didn't have Zach Greinke. Okay, he had been traded to help set up that team. Ned Yost, what he did, we should be forever in debt to him as a manager. And it's crazy to think that we all were chanting, oh, got Yosted again, got Yosted again. What is Ned thinking? What is he doing? And yet he's the one that was the manager and is the all-time winningest manager, the greatest manager in Royals history. He is. Mm-hmm. How can you debate that? Whitey Herzog was better. No, he was not. Well, Dick Houser is better. No, he was not. No Royals manager ever took a team to the World Series twice. Ned not only did it twice, he did it back-to-back years and won it.
There's two things about Ned Yost that I kind of want to point out. And The first
with
one.
With no superstar, by the way. No guy hitting 50 home runs.
The first one is that he was willing to fall on a sword twice in his career because he got axed at Milwaukee, but he should get a lot of credit for what Milwaukee did and the improvements that they made to get to where they were. He had to do that once, and the Royals knew that he did it once, and they saw what Milwaukee did after he left.
Yes.
And understanding that he had a really big hand in that. And so he fell on a sword again. He came to Kansas City and said, hey, I'm going to take a lot of losses on my record. But you could tell that didn't matter to him, right?
Yep.
Like, he wasn't going to let outside noise bother his day.
No.
And it never did, and he just went about his business and did what he could do, and falling on the sword ended up being a blessing for Royals fans everywhere, because they decided, Dayton Moore decided to take that sword with him, right, and ride him and not panic and fire him at the wrong time. And, you know, like you said, if you listen to fans, he'd have been gone midway through the 2014 season. There wouldn't have been a World Series. The other thing about his postseason record that I think we overlook a lot because they didn't win the World Series in 2014, it is insane to sweep your way to the World Series with all the extra inning games they played in that postseason.
8-0.
To come back and beat the A's, first of all, was insane.
It was.
And then to win two more games in a row and extras against the Angels and then finish them off authoritatively in the third game. Mm-hmm. But then to sweep Baltimore, Jerrod Dyson says, we're not coming back here. So we want that mentality. And they didn't go back to Baltimore.
No, they didn't.
And to sweep those eight games to get to the World Series, I think we overlook it.
I agree.
Because they won in 2015, right? We remember the things that they did, the great thing they did, which was hoist the trophy, right?
Yep.
Win the thing in the end is what you remember. But I just, when you look at that postseason record and you ask the layperson who the winningest postseason coach is in history of Major League Baseball,
right?
We as Royals fans can kind of dissect that. A lot of people can't. But as I'm listening to you talk about it, I'm like, that's insane.
It is.
To go 8-0, win all those extra inning games, and just sweep your way in. The Giants didn't do that. Of course, I don't know if it hurt or helped the Royals that they had to sit out and wait a little bit, but the World Series is going to start whenever it starts.
Right.
But the Giants went a little bit deeper in their NLCS and had to play some games closer to the start of the World Series and maybe keep their bodies where they needed to be. But it's just all that part of it for me is insane. And there are people that legitimately think that Ned Yost shouldn't be in the Royals Hall of Fame because he has a losing record. And I'm like, you guys are
ridiculous.
Not Royals fans. You didn't watch it. You don't understand it. You're
that's
just
ridiculous.
A layperson that says he lost all these games and this and that. And I'm like, no, he is the best manager in Royals history. If you had to go through and endure what he had to endure at the start of his career as a manager, you would have a much worse losing record than Ned Yost did. So let's just kind of temper that a little bit and understand that he's deserving of every accolade he gets from this organization.
The players loved him.
Absolutely.
They loved playing for him.
He loved his players. That's why they loved him.
Right. And he stuck by his players. As you said, he'd fallen the sword multiple times, and he had a plan. I give him credit, and he stuck to that plan. And I'm just looking at his career record in regards to what he did with the Royals. When he came on with the Royals, they went 55-72, and then they were 71-91, 72-90, and then 86-76-13, where they made a bit of a run. 89-73 got in. We know what happened there, as we said. And then 95-67, best record in baseball, and they won the World Series. Next year, 81-81, and the guys had some aging players. And then 80-82. I mean, the next 2 years, the Royals were still decent.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last 2 years, he knew that they were going through a rebuilding phase. And to his credit, he could easily got out after 17.
Mm-hmm.
Easily could have got out after 17. And instead, he stayed on to endure 207 more losses. 58-104, 59-103. So he was willing to not only be a part of a rebuild at the beginning when he went to Kansas City, but he was willing to be a part of the start of another rebuild. And a lot of managers, and we see even high school coaches in our area, for crying out loud, quit as soon as the talent dries up. And to their credit, I understand why they do. But in other cases, people say, well, that's convenient, whatever way you want to look at it. Ned Yost didn't do that. I mean, he could have helped his overall record is 12-03-13-41. And if you take away 207 losses there, his record is a lot closer to 500 if he just gets out after they go 80-82. And he managed into his mid-60s. I mean, it is Ned needs to get a lot of credit. And I'm so happy that – and think about this for a second. If you take away – the 8 straight wins to start the playoffs, he still went 14-9.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that was some little 2-week fluke, because they did it the very next year. And that rarely happens. And I thought we were toast. We lost the game 7 with Salvi popping up. I thought, well, that was great and
fun
all.
Fun ride.
Yeah, fun ride. I was like, there's no way the Royals are going to World Series the next year and winning it all. Never. It just doesn't happen. And Ned Yost was the catalyst for that. And the other thing that Ned Yost did is he utilized small ball, and he gave the freedom to guys to steal bases. And sometimes he had the cojones, whatever you want to call it, to have guys steal in situations where you're like, wow, that's not really, nah, I don't know about that. But he had such faith in Dyson and Gore even. I mean, you knew it was coming. He still couldn't stop it. Mm-hmm. And then he brings in the bullpen and says, hey, I don't care. Here we go. Boom, 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 boom. We're done. Game over. He managed the game. What he did so well was he managed the game and shortened it so well, made the right moves to get through the first. He doesn't get it. Ned Yost does not get enough credit for navigating the first 5 or 6 innings. Everybody gives him credit for 7, 8, 9, which mm-hmm. some people say, well, even a dunce could have done that. Yeah, but you have to get to the 7th with the lead. And he was really good at navigating his starting pitching, which wasn't great, to get him through 5 1/3. Or he had a long relief guy and pushed the right button to bring him in to keep the game close to where they could scratch a run or two away, scratch a run or two across, and then turn it over to Herrera and Mattson and Davis, or Holland when he was part of the equation, or a Hochaver. You're right. He deserves a lot of credit, and rightfully now he's going in the Royals Hall of Fame. Anybody that tells you he shouldn't be in the Royals Hall of Fame, they don't know Royals baseball.
That wild card game actually, you know, flipped, you know, the thinking on its ear. You're supposed to, when you're behind, you're supposed to kind of shut down the running game, not run into any outs.
No, we're still second and third,
and hit the big home run or get the big inning to get yourself back in it. No, he just said, well, you know, we got to play the way we got to play, and every time there was a runner on, turn the pressure on, mm-hmm. you know, and it led to that pitcher wearing out, and you know, Lester doesn't keep runners close, so he knew what he had there, so he was able to take advantage of that and kind of turn it upside down, the logic upside down for a game, and got the wild card win.
We're talking about breaks and little things, okay? The wild card game, the A's had their best defensive catcher. He was really good at throwing guys out. He hurt himself early in the game, a thumb. They replaced him with their backup catcher, who was not nearly as good at throwing guys out, and the Royals stole 7 or 8 bases in that game. That's a little thing. What if their starting catcher doesn't get hurt? Does that stuff happen? You don't know. That's a break mm-hmm. that Royals caught. They caught a break clearly when Gomes and the center fielder run into each other trying to catch Hosmer's ball. Ends up being a triple. Okay, that should have been caught. Mm-hmm. So you catch, you know, Murphy letting the ball go between his legs. I mean, there's so many things that went the Royals' way. But the Royals made their own breaks because they studied Jose Bautista, mm-hmm. and they knew that he didn't throw and hit his cutoff man. So Kane ran all the way from first to home on a single to win the ALCS. They knew that Lucas Duda wasn't going to be paying attention, and David Wright, as soon as he turned, Eric Hosmer should have been a dead duck at the plate. He should have been out by 10 feet. A good throw, and Hosmer's completely dead. But yet, they were aggressive. They pushed the envelope, and it worked to a T. And the guy you got to give credit to, obviously, there's assistant coaches, managers helping, and whatever. But Ned Yost gave him the freedom to do all that. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So I'm happy for Ned. And I'm just glad he doesn't fall off a tree stand anymore.
Oh, man.
He was lucky. He was very lucky. It wasn't worse than it was. So there you go. All right, Dusty, high school basketball game on the radio?
Yeah, Katy Country 94 tonight. It's Rock Hills at Thunder Ridge. Pregame 5:50, tip-off at 6 o'clock. Also online at katycountry94.com. And then on Z96 to the lake. And then the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com. Beloit is at Minneapolis in NCAA play. Pregame coverage at 5:50 tonight.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.